Welcome back on this Friday, the 7th day of July, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Collin. It is a holiday-shortened week, and as you might suspect, there were a lot of things that happened, especially overseas, and an even bigger whole lot of things that, for the most part, didn't get reported. There's also the usual amount that did get reported, but probably isn't even true. And we'll get to all of that over the next few minutes, from World War III to a crackhead in the White House, although arguably none of that is really all that new. And yes, it illustrates again how far in the wrong direction once free America has now descended or been flushed. So let's start here. The story from France we've been following all week. Now there's an update. Because one of the things which should really stand out is the contrast with other nations which don't share our history. Not long after the American Revolution for Independence, France demonstrated what happens in the absence of those self-evident truths that we have a creator and the purpose of government is to secure rights that come from him, as opposed to liberté, égalité, fraternité, which didn't work out nearly so well. And they've had their own invasion going on for quite a few years at this point, which really seems to have turned the tide in the wrong direction. But in just a bit over the last week, France has not only gone down the toilet, but rounded the bend of the trap and headed for the truly dark place. Their socialist dictator Macron, in true Biden-Führer style, although arguably, he was doing it even before the senile marionette and his puppeteers stole the election. While Macron and his minions certainly have managed to ramp things up, now it seems that they've certainly reaped the bitter harvest of inviting an Islamic invasion into the country to destroy its institutions and overturn its rule of law, and now France is basically on fire. Although as of Tuesday night, some of it seems to have almost burned itself out. Says the Gateway Pundit summary, the situation calmed a bit on the eighth night of unrest since the officer-involved death of 17-year-old driver Nahel, with less than two dozen arrests and only 116 fires that night on public roads. And I guess you could call this an improvement. Only eight more buildings were set on fire. But since the carnage began, there have been over 1,000 buildings burned, 5,600 vehicles destroyed, and 3,300 arrests over just the last 1 week and 1 day. Reports over the weekend said social unrest, riots, and arson spread like cancer across French cities, with close to 3,000 fires reported just by Saturday, and hundreds of buildings and vehicles all set ablaze. And like previous color revolutions before it, this violence was allegedly sparked on by a teenager being shot dead by a police officer. And hey, guess what, folks? They're not going to tell you. But if you suspect that there's a bit more to it than that, stay tuned. And oh, by the way, what's the Macron regime response to the carnage? Yeah, crack down. No, not on Islamic invasion and terrorists, but free speech. We don't want people hearing about what we've allowed to happen. Said TGP's coverage, the French government and socialist media companies have, quote, taken a number of measures to change the algorithms on socialist media websites to prevent, quote, images of violence, especially if they show what's really happening, from going viral, said the French digital minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, essentially proposing that a government committee for internet censorship be used to prevent the truth about the largest race riots in European history from actually being seen by the victims. In an almost post-mortem story, courtesy of Jean Cochran via Remix News and Zero Hedge, La Parisienne says that France has suffered about €1 billion in damage so far due to widespread rioting, and more than 200 shops have been completely looted, 300 bank branches destroyed, 250 tobacconists affected via operating methods of what they call absolute violence. One story I saw separately over the weekend, folks, said a popular technique seemed to be setting a large vehicle on fire and then sending it into a building. Quote, everything was stolen, even cash registers, before fires were set to destroy what's left. The insurers are being mobilized to go as quickly as possible, said the head of France's largest employer foundation, Geoffrey Roux de Bizeau. I'm quite confident that the businesses concerned will be compensated. But despite Bizeau's claim that businesses will be paid out, insurance companies often raise premiums on those businesses due to the increased costs, obvious as it now must be, of future riots. Even so, notes Bizeau, this tremendous figure still doesn't even factor in the effect on tourism and also doesn't include damage to public institutions like schools, libraries, police stations, as well as the hundreds of vehicles torched during the nationwide riots. Said Bizeau, the video of the riots, which circulated worldwide, damaged the image of France. Gee, do you think? It's always difficult, he said, to know if the impact will be lasting, but there will certainly be a drop in bookings this summer, when the season once looked promising. Trips have already been canceled, he said. And just to put all this in perspective, folks, as bad as the so-called George Floyd riots, courtesy of BLM, Antifa, and the far-left three-letter agencies was, they cost an estimated 2 billion equivalent euros. However, a number of experts argue that even though that was a low estimate, France is a much smaller country. So, proportionally, these are even worse. And it all happened in just a little over a week. We shouldn't overlook this interesting aspect to what some, at least in the alternative press, are calling yet another color revolution, this time in France. You won't see the word migrant or much less Islamic terrorists or anything that even intimates what the actual nationality of the invaders that are destroying France might be. For example, I did searches of several Daily Mail stories. I didn't find the word Muslim or Islamic in any form in any of them, or even the word migrant. You have to look in different stories to find words like Algerian or Moroccan descent. But I did see these things in other coverage. Here's one from The Weekend that says, overnight, French Islamist rioters have burned down buildings, killed, injured, and even maimed French locals, looted shops, destroyed vehicles, and laid waste to every major French city. Investigative reporter Andy No, noting that a jewelry store in Marseille was ransacked and looted during the ongoing race riots as part of what he called France's own George Floyd moment following the police shooting death of a French-Algerian youth, who may or may not, yeah, it's hard to tell, have been attempting to run down a French police officer with his vehicle at the time. Other reports said things like white people are being attacked at random, and some attacks seem to show mutilation via machete by Muslims. And that some of the looters have become so confident they're even seizing 5.56 millimeter machine guns from police. No wonder they're cracking down on socialist media. There was a bit of sanity from the just slightly right of center. They call it extreme right over there, of course. Marine Le Pen said, quote, while our country has just been delivered to the looting and looting, I would like to ask you the question that all French people ask themselves. What have you done with France? Unquote. And by midweek, as if we didn't already know it, we had the answer, just like we saw with the Patriot Act and all the other moves towards increased totalitarianism all around the world. France took advantage of the, planned riots and color revolution to do the following. According to Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, cops in France have now been granted the authority to remotely activate, who could have thought it, a suspect, and that would be every French person. Anyway, their cell phone, camera, microphone, and GPS, after the passage of a provision in a so-called Just Us Reform Bill on Wednesday night. It allows geolocation of everybody they want, covers other devices too, not just phones, laptops, cars, connected devices, anything that can be remotely activated, which is just about anything connected to the web, to record sound and images and whatever else they want of people suspected of terror offenses, as well as delinquency, organized crime, and no doubt a whole lot of phobics added to that list before very long. There are at least a few people that are saying, hey, this is too much. La Quadrature du Net said, the provisions raise serious concerns, do you think, over infringements of fundamental liberties. They violate the right to security, the right to a private life, private correspondence, and the right to come and go freely. And the group called it, yeah, what else is new? A slide into heavy-handed security. Lawmakers said, Achtung, and I'm paraphrasing here, this is what we do when you allow us to make you trade essential liberty for a little temporary security. Oh, yeah, and rape your country besides. On a perhaps even gnarlier note, in the once-free United States, the Biden whorehouse is showing America what the opposite of a declaration of independence from Fat George looks like, and arguably why Senile Joe makes him look like a piker. No, you don't have to worry about a copy of the Declaration of Independence being found at the White Whorehouse, but yeah, when it comes to suspicious bags containing white powder, you can probably guess. The Secret Service on Tuesday says Zero Hedge's piece confirmed rumors from the day before that it was investigating the unknown item found inside the White House library. It turns out it wasn't actually the library. It was somewhere else in the West Wing. Described in radio traffic as a cocaine-like substance. The discovery came just 2 days after crackhead son Hunter Biden was last seen at the White Whorehouse. Even so, the claim is there's some mystery about how the cocaine got there. Yeah, who are we kidding, folks? So many potential suspects. For all we know, this could be something left over from Obama's stash. The Daily Mail headline is at least entertaining. White House cocaine found inside a dime-sized baggie inside a cubby used by staff and guests for their cell phones. New details emerge, it says, in the West Wing mystery, as a lab test has now confirmed that the white powder was, in fact, and you guessed it, a Biden family favorite. Of course, we really have to point out it's only illegal for people that aren't slurping at the highest levels of the public trough. Yeah, the piece says secondary lab testing has found that the white powder was, in fact, but they're careful to put this word preliminarily in there, cocaine. Now, folks, here I want to pause and make an historic observation. I can remember when it would have been shocking to the American people that we had cokeheads in the White House, in the Oval Office, and that they're probably doing lines on the Resolute desk and other stuff. The rapist president at least started to change all of that. I can remember the undercover video of Roger Clinton saying his brother Bill famously had a nose like a Hoover vacuum cleaner. You know, but on the other hand, it was shocking to people once when the president had to say, I am not a crook. And yet Tricky Dick Nixon looks like a saint compared to any of the scumbags that are in this current regime. So now, the level of how far down this toilet bowl we've gone is what is really shocking to people, or should be shocking to people. They're not even surprised anymore. And the related item, I guess, and this is a story that I think was kind of fascinating in the smoke, it was evidently the Secret Service that used an open radio channel, and they knew there would be scanners monitoring to broadcast the fact that we found an unknown white powder here in the White House, and they knew it was going to be they knew it was going to get out. And as the suggestion has been made, this was the Secret Service saying, look, we've had enough, too many cokeheads in the White House, we're tired of carrying water for this communist Chinese puppet who doesn't even know when his own diapers need changing. Let it slip that we know, and they know we know what's going on. The Secret Service did tell the Daily Mail they didn't want to comment on the ongoing investigation, and you can guess what that means. But they doubled down that the white powder substance was found in a, quote, work area within the West Wing, in a small zippered bag in a storage facility. Although it's unclear, they note just how long the bag and its contents were at the White Whorehouse. A source familiar with the investigation said Tuesday that considering the substance was found in that highly trafficked area, pun intended, of the White Whorehouse, it could be, and I think it was intended to be, difficult to track down the culprit. Again, all the usual suspects and more. Who brought it into the White House? Although Republican lawmakers, conservative trolls, and just about everybody else is suggesting the most likely suspect is the addict's son Hunter, age 52. So as we move on, I gotta say it again. Anybody else remember what it would have shocked the nation to have a crackhead in the White House or even close by, much less staying there? And the very idea of a communist spy having stolen the election and taking tens of millions of dollars in bribes to get there would have also been unthinkable? I guess you could argue that the only reason it's unthinkable today is because Big Brother's captive whorehouse media can't even be trusted to report on it, honestly. And I guess fittingly, this is the final bit of irony. While the Biden Fuhrer ignored pointed questions about Coke in the White House after one of his so-called 4th of July messages, he doesn't even know, folks, which document the word self-evident truths came from. He did manage to prattle on about one of his favorite subjects, disarming once free Americans and taking away their right to keep and bear arms. Kind of exactly like Fat George did. That started the whole thing off to begin with. And that, too, isn't taught in the educational institutions that he wants to make sure are completely disarmed and therefore ready for what they've got planned next. Speaking of which, we've certainly had a number of clues on that front over the last few days, perhaps because of the 4th of July weekend and thus the inattention of the so-called Fourth Estate. What we're seeing instead, though, looks like a great setup for a false flag at bare minimum. Not to mention the road to taking World War III nuclear. Almost 2 weeks ago, the Senate's two biggest warmongers, Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal, set that train on the tracks by introducing a resolution in the Senate claiming that if Russia or any of its proxies does anything, and gee, we can't imagine what it might be, to the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant, causing radiation to leak, why that, they said, we would consider to be an attack upon NATO, violating Article 5 and worthy of nuclear escalation, and reducing the entire world to radioactive ash. Well, at the very least, maybe we can goad Russia into a nuclear first strike against us. Well, folks, to say that the false flag went into high gear over last weekend is arguably an understatement. Lots and lots of stories, most of them only peripherally from the waste stream, make the point. We'll start with the official word from America's most famous puppet, Volodymyr Zelensky, the guy whose major qualification to be president of anything is that he can play piano with his penis, who said, quote, "Now we have information from our intelligence, sick, that the Russian military has placed objects resembling explosives on the roof of several power units of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, perhaps," he says, "to simulate an attack on the plant. Perhaps they have some other scenario, but in any case, the world sees, can't but see, that the only source of danger to the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant is Russia and no one else. And good grief, what a bunch of idiocy. Oh yeah, let's blow up this nuclear power plant, thinks Russia, because we're directly downwind. That'll show us." Zarahedge's coverage, a bit more rational, says that Zelensky has once again been warning the public and the West that Russia is planning, or so they say, to stage some kind of disastrous nuclear fallout event centered on the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, Europe's largest, and the claims from Ukrainian top officials have been persisting for weeks at this point, but they've grown louder over the last several days as Americans are preoccupied with July 4th festivities. Said Zelensky days ago, "This is a serious threat because Russia is technically ready to provoke a local explosion at the station, which could lead to a radiation release," he said. The Guardian cited Ukraine's intelligence arm, the GUR, to say that several representatives of Russia's state nuclear energy agency, Rosatom, have already left. And furthermore, Ukrainian employees who stayed at the plant and signed contracts with Rosatom had been told to evacuate by Monday, preferably to Crimea. So be afraid, be very afraid, but wait a minute. When it comes to that spin, it's tough to top the Daily Mail. Exclusive, says their banner headline, "An explosion at Zaporizhia is much more terrifying and massive than Hiroshima. It's not even comparable. Experts," they say breathlessly, "warn of disaster after Russia has mined the nuclear power plant." Said one of the so-called experts, "Such a blast would be much more terrifying and a massive nuclear accident that, in the conditions of such a war, can lead to unpredictable consequences," he said. And the warning is from Yuri Kostenko, former, yeah, pun intended, former Minister of Environmental Protection, SIC, and Nuclear Safety of Ukraine. At least somewhere down in this bit of tripe, the Daily Mail notes that Russia and Ukraine have been regularly accusing each other of putting the plant's safety at risk since the Kremlin, they say, launched large-scale hostilities in Ukraine last February. Notice, folks, the first thing they did was take over that nuclear power plant, allegedly to make sure that nothing happened to it. And indeed, since they've had it, so far at least, nothing has, in spite of attacks that have been attributed to, well, missiles and mortars and things being fired from Ukraine at it. I think it's important to ask the question. We've been doing it for month after month after month at this point. If Russia really wanted to blow that plant up and spread radiation downwind all over their own territory, why wait? They could have done it a long time ago and any day since. Color your host, in other words, more than suspicious. I guess it's fair to quote RT on this one. Their headline says, "Russian nuclear giant claims Ukrainian attack on power plant is imminent." Yes, says the sub-banner here, "Kiev could strike the Zaporizhia facility with a dirty nuclear device," says a senior Russian official. "They could launch a large-scale attack on Zaporizhia, or they could strike the plant with a missile stuffed with radioactive waste," said Renat Karshaa, a senior aide to the head of a subsidiary of Russia's state-owned atomic energy giant Rosatom, citing intelligence data received from industry. He thinks the attack is imminent, and it could be via either long-range high-precision munitions or perhaps suicide drones, he told the Russia 24 TV channel. Adding that Kiev may also attempt a strike on the plant with heavy Soviet-made Toshka-U tactical ballistic missiles, which could be filled with radioactive waste collected from the South Ukrainian nuclear power plant. Russia Today adds that the UN watchdog boss, Rafael Mariano Grossi, has recently visited that facility and disputed Ukraine's allegations, stating in his report that, quote, "no mines were observed at the site during the director general's visit, including the cooling pond." At least everybody agrees on the bottom line, folks. If the West does find radiation there, regardless of where it comes from, you know who's going to get the blame, because we can see how the skids have already been greased, and you know what they'll be able to do next. For their part, Russia is officially saying they're going to keep troops in the vicinity to prevent what they claim is a coming false flag attack, and at least so far, they seem to have been successful at it. Here's a bit of good news, this time courtesy of Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden. In an order fittingly issued on Independence Day, a federal judge in Louisiana has now forbidden multiple federal agencies and named officials from having any contact with social media companies with the intent to force them to moderate content. The preliminary injunction arises from a suit filed by the states of Missouri and Louisiana, along with individuals that include two leading critics of the COVID-1984 pandemic lockdown regime, Harvard's Martin Kulldorff and Stanford's Jay Bhattacharya, as well as Jim Hoft, who owns the website that we quote here frequently, The Gateway Pundit. Wrote U.S. District Judge Terry A. Doughty, if the allegations made by plaintiffs are true, the present case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history. The plaintiffs, he continued, are likely to succeed on the merits in establishing that the government has used its power to silence the opposition. And the dozens of people and agencies now bound, at least if we believe the law still has anything to say about it, by the injunction include the Biden Fuhrer, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre, the Federal Death Agency, or FDA, the Center for Death and Control, CDC, the Treasury Department, the State Department, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission, how's that for a misnomer, the FBI, und the entire Department of Justice, as well as the Department of Health und Human Services. You may recall that Bhattacharya and Kulldorff are among the originators, says the piece, of the Great Barrington Declaration that denounced the lockdown regime, and they've also been victims of socialist media censorship. For example, the pair says that their censorship-triggered statements included assertions that, quote, thinking everyone must be vaccinated is scientifically flawed. They also questioned the value of the face diapers, and they stated that natural immunity, who could imagine such a thing, is stronger than vaccine immunity, since basically, folks, you'd think that would be obvious if science still had any role to play, because it's natural immunity that helps, at least if we still had actual vaccines, allow the so-called vaccines to work. And while the case is dominated, says the coverage, by COVID-19 censorship, it also encompasses the Just Us Department's efforts to suppress reporting about Hunter Biden's laptop from hell in the run-up to the rigged 2020 election. And Judge Doughty gave credence to that accusation. In this 155-page ruling, Doughty really took Big Brother to task, saying, quote, the evidence thus far depicts an almost dystopian scenario, he said. During the COVID-19 pandemic, he did spell it wrong, a period perhaps best characterized by widespread doubt and uncertainty, the United States government seems to have assumed a role similar to an Orwellian Ministry of Truth. The White House defendants made it very clear to social media companies what they wanted suppressed and what they wanted amplified, he wrote. Faced with unrelenting pressure from the most powerful office in the world, well, it is, I guess, if you count those pulling the strings, the social media companies, he said, apparently complied. Doughty quoted communications from administration officials to media company employees saying they, quote, represent examples of coercion exercised by the White House defendants. And here's just a sampling of some of the coercion, says Zero Hedge. Quote, cannot stress the degree to which this needs to be resolved immediately. Please remove this account immediately. Another to Facebook said, are you guys fucking serious? I want an answer on what happened here, and I want it today. Unquote. Sounds a bit like Hunter Biden, doesn't it? How about this one? This is a concern that is shared at the highest, and I mean highest, levels of the WH. And finally, this quote. Hey, folks, wanted to flag the below tweet, and I'm wondering if we can get moving on the process of having it removed ASAP. Unquote. And the judge noted that the badgering came simultaneously with threats of changing the social media regulation scheme, and that those threats carried extra credibility since they came as the far left, he wrote, Democrats controlled both the White House and Congress. And here's fascism in action. The accusation that the socialist media platforms and government were acting in concert is substantiated by the communications. Quote, many emails between the White House and social media companies refer to themselves as partners, the judge wrote. Twitter even talks about their partner support portal. And how's that, folks, for open fascism in your face? At least so, more and more Americans and one judge are starting to see it. Shabbat shalom, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.